There it is. Don't need the slip because Katie Martin's done all the work.
This is Through the Pickets, a podcast proudly brought to you by the New Zealand Cricket Players Association, where we showcase our members' interests, achievements and experiences either side of the white picket fence, with more of a lens on their off-field endeavours. Today's episode features a woman whose international and domestic career spanned over 21 years. She played for the White Ferns on 199 occasions, scoring just under 3,000 runs and taking 126 international wicket-keeping dismissals. Domestically, she has scored over 6,000 runs and dispatched 262 wickets in her 279 fixtures. More recently, Katie Martin can be found commentating on matches both here in New Zealand and across the Tasman.
Yeah! And stumped. Beautiful work by the keeper, Katie Martin.
Oh, use of the feet. What a shot that is. Has it gone all the way? You betcha. What a way to finish the over. That's a big blow. Half a dozen for Martin.
Oh, that's well taken by Martin.
Wait for it. Right. Wait for it.
It's a great take.
It's out.
Brilliant keeping.
Former White Fern and Otago stalwart representing New Zealand on 199 occasions behind the stumps, the ever vocal, ever bubbly Katie Martin. Welcome to Through the Pickets. Katie, you might have retired, but you haven't been putting your feet up. You sound busier than ever. When I called you up to do the podcast, I said, oh, I just got back from Aussie. So what have you been up to?
Yeah, I've got a thing about keeping myself busy, so I probably need to calm down a little bit now. I'm getting a bit older. But, yeah, I was doing some commentary on the WBBL, so I got asked for that a little bit earlier in the year, and I said I just have to double-check if my mates are going along and whether Batesy and Mealy and Sophie were going to be there, and they said they were, so I jumped at the chance. So, yeah, no, it's been pretty good. 6 weeks over in Australia, and the weather was slightly better than it has been in New Zealand as well, so that was pretty fortunate.
How have you been enjoying the commentary gig?
Yeah, it's been good. It's not something that I originally planned to do when I sort of retired from cricket. I sort of fell into it. I tended to get asked to be on the mic because bowlers are a little bit precious, so they sort of felt like they didn't want to have the mic on while they were bowling. So, and I always love a chat, and I love to say a few stories, whether they're, you know, 100% truthful or not. There's truth to most of them. They just may be a little bit more added on, which is the way to go. But no, I've loved it, and I sort of like a fan talking about cricket, the game I love, so I sort of feel like I've fell into a bit of a golden trap here. So, yeah, I'm really enjoying it. And it's, in a way, it's a way to give back to the game as well. Even though I get lots of benefit from it, it means I can actually talk to the game and provide my insights. So, yeah, it's a different lifestyle, but it's good at the moment.
Katie, if I may say, you're an absolute natural duck to water. Is it the same story for you, or is there some stuff that you went, whoa?
Yeah, there's a few different bits and pieces. I was fortunate enough to have a little bit of training, so Players Association set me up with some training to understand the buttons and what all the chatter is in the ears and things like that. So I'm quite hard on myself, to be honest, so it wasn't sort of natural in that respect, but I've been fortunate enough to have people I'm able to talk to and get guidance. And Dad used to do a bit of radio commentary when he was younger, and when I was a 15-year-old, I used to sit beside him at Carisbrook listening to him commentate on the rugby. So I sort of picked up a few bits and pieces. So I think he's probably my harshest critic, but he did get told off by Mum once, actually. Said, you can say something nice, Dad. But so yeah, I wouldn't say I'm a duck to water, but it sort of took a bit of time to work out what sort of style I wanted to be, and all I know is how is being myself. So that's what I've gone with, and either people love it or hate it. And yeah, I don't think I'm funny whatsoever. I just think I just try and be relaxed in it, and yeah, just try and add to what those athletes are doing out in the field.
What was the hardest part to get your head around?
Like the constant chatter in the ear, although I think I should realise that because I'm a wicket keeper, so I probably feel like I've been in the batter's the batter's shoes. But yeah, you get like the directors and the producers talking into your ear and being really clear, like using less words to say the same thing. I sort of chat a lot, so it's just trying to get to the point and get there a little bit quicker with less words. So yeah, I sort of slowly work through that as time goes on. Yeah, and not talking too fast. I'm naturally fast talker, fast walker, so it's just trying to slow down and sort of the way I speak. So yeah, there's been a few things to try and just eke out and work on. But yeah, that's probably the main thing.
Look, I see you're part of Channel 7's lineup in Aussie. Wow, are you in some esteemed company there? Do you ever sit there and think, this timing is absolutely brilliant? You know, you're sort of coming towards the end of your career, you just started off getting into it, and then it's just blossomed for you.
Yeah, I think it was 2 years ago when we were in the hub in Australia, where New Zealand, we played Australia in a series in Brisbane, I think it was, and that's when they reached out and said, oh, we've got an opportunity, we need someone for a couple of weeks, do you want to backfill in there? And I said, oh yeah, no worries. And so I turn up and there's Mel Jones, who's one of, I guess, from a broadcasting perspective, is probably one of my idols. And so to work with her and Julia Price, who I idolise as a wicketkeeper as well, is sort of like, oh goodness gracious. And then a week later, Michael Slater and Lisa Stelaker turn up, and I just thought, what's going on around here? So yeah, it was a bit overwhelming in that respect, because yeah, they're such legends of the game, and someone people I've always looked up to when I played. And I know Mel's been around a lot for when I was playing as well, and commentating on cricket. But yeah, they've been great. I remember there was a time, there's this blooper reel going around my very first time where there was a rain delay, and I am terrible at maths. Like, I failed fifth form maths, and then sixth form I did maths that was the same as fifth form, and failed that as well. So I'm not great with numbers. And they said, oh, it's a rain break. Oh, we're coming back on. Can you quickly get on and then tell us how many overs to go? Like, what the bowlers are. And I'm just like, oh, no. Oh, it's actually a numbers dyslexia thing. So I think I've got that. I don't know what it's called. And so there's no monitor down there to be able to read what's been talked about. I had no paper because I was just sitting there while the actual host went to the toilet. So I feel like I've got slightly stitched up. And
right,
this guy's beside the microphone telling me these overs. So I'm like looking at him and I'm like, there's five overs. There's six. No, each bowler can bowl three and two. No, and then it just like, the only thing I got out was there was 18 overs to go. And I think it's 5 minutes. And what I didn't know is there was a banner at the bottom and it was saying exactly what they wanted me to say, but I couldn't see it. And so anyway, they haven't taken the mickey as they do in Australia. And the next day, Mel Jones gives me this book of cards and she goes, here you go, you might need those. So I'm not sure if I took it as a compliment or you need to be more organised. But yeah, that was my sort of first introduction to Jonesy. But yeah, no, I've sort of created quite a good bond. Like Lisa Stelaker has really taken me under her wing, and you're able to sort of just ask questions about and like bounce off each other about stuff to talk about. And when you sort of read the game quite similar, it makes it quite good and enjoyable to be talking about it. So yeah, it's been a bit of a mind-blowing sort of experience, to be fair.
But it is daunting for people that haven't done it before, having constant chatter in your ear and trying to hold a conversation, or even have that thought process to, like you said, think how many overs, or if you haven't got a statistician or any resource you can look at, it's literally you're just out in the wilderness filling in a minute, as you know, Katie, or 2 minutes on air. It just feels like an eternity, especially if you're not talking.
Yeah, I was trying to say something the other day. I think it was Craig McMillan and Scotty Stevenson, and I, there was a bit going, it's like 30 seconds to go. So I've ended up using my hand to talk about how big the boundaries were and then stopped with 20 seconds to go. And Scotty looked at me and then he had to fill for 20 seconds. He goes, maybe a 5 or 6 more seconds would have been nice there, Kate. I was like, yeah, no worries. Sorry, mate. So, but yeah, no, it's pretty good. Like when you sort of feel like those around just sort of have your back, and but we all make mistakes, right? But if you can sort of laugh your way through it and people don't leave you high and dry, then that makes it a really good commentary box to be a part of.
I was going to say, Scotty's a pro. Whether you give him 5 seconds or 25, he'll get you to zero, which is like the ultimate goal for any host, is when the count's going and you hit zero at the same time, you're like, yeah.
I'll have to ask him that. I'm sure he probably high fives himself when he hits the mark. Now he's a true professional. He's been very good to me as well, though at times I think we've been canned by talking together, because we sort of talk more about cheese and holidays and stuff like that. So it's a fine balance for us talking about cricket and other aspects of life.
You mentioned it before. I know the NZCPA helped you a little bit with some commentary training. I think it was Gav Scavell, if I'm not mistaken, that gave you a hand. It must be great having that type of support or resource available, no matter which direction in life you want to go in, you know, post-cricket.
Yeah, I think that's what the Players Association has been able to help me with, is sort of that transition from, I guess, cricket life to normal work life. I've always sort of worked in a corporate environment, and it was something that, yeah, it was great, but just got too much in terms of time trying to be able to do it all. So talked to Leslie, who was our PDM at the time, what we could do, and She said, oh, actually, there's an opportunity. Do you want to do it? And I was, oh, yeah, no worries. And I was horrendous. Like, it was, I was under more pressure doing that than I worked at when I worked into corporate environment, just the way that it was in a different environment. But just that support to be able to go, well, Katie, go back and have another session and work on it a bit more. So there was sort of that, the funds there that were able to, for me to do it. And I wouldn't be in the position I would be now if I didn't have that support, that training initially, to be able to get to where I've got to. So it's, I think players need to reach out all the way throughout their career and continue to build those skills, especially in the women's game where, like, it's gone quite amateur to professional very quickly, and there's going to take time to get that. What does life look like as a professional athlete? A lot of the youngsters are going to come in now and go straight on those pro contracts. So what can they have in terms of balance outside of cricket? I tell you what, it can be pulled away from you, you know, each year at a contract. And we've probably seen that a few of the older players, you know, missing out on contracts. It's sort of like, what does life look like after that? So, yeah, I think it's important to utilise the resources and the people at the Players Association. There's a lot of trust and respect that, you know, it's always your best interests at heart, and whatever you need, you know, they'll work on providing that. So, yeah, I've been very grateful for the support that I've been able to do there. It's a little odd getting ex-international player emails now after 21 years, but, yeah, it's great to sort of know that now I've retired as well, I still get the guys reaching out and seeing what support I can have as well.
I hope you got my latest employment report the other day. I think I sent that out like a couple of days ago, so...
I did read it. Yes, I did.
All right, good. Just checking. Katie, you touched on this a little bit just in that answer too, but in your 21-year career, how much has the women's game changed? It's been dramatic, hasn't it?
Yeah, just the athleticism, the facilities, the support as well from the Players Association. I think when we started, we didn't have a Players Association, and then when they come on board, we told them we got $30 a day or $60 if you lived away from home, and they couldn't believe it. I guess that wouldn't pay for avocado on toast these days with inflation. But, yeah, so they were able just to provide that extra bit of support for us and then help us with those negotiations. And, you know, players can start on over $100,000 now as 18-year-olds. So it's not just the money. I think that's, you know, it helps that you can focus fully on cricket and be able to do that as a career, and hopefully attract a lot of younger players now that go, actually, I want to have a career in playing cricket. And then obviously outside of that, if there's broadcasting opportunities as well. So, yeah, and I just think New Zealand cricket is starting to get around the game a bit more. We've seen like the growth of women's sport and how when you get a little bit of support and you get a bit of backing from the public, how people really enjoy the game. And it's in its own right. It's like women's sport is easy to be compared to men's sport, you know, women's rugby to men's rugby, cricket to men's cricket. It's a game that's played differently from the different genders purely because guys are a lot stronger, they're a lot faster, whereas women do it in their own way. And being able to watch the game in its own silo, it shows actually the skill set that the female athletes have in their various sports. And I think that's what's been pleasing is the change in that athleticism, but the understanding of what the women's game is in comparison to, say, you know, the men's version of it as well. So I think we're sort of just scratching on the surface in New Zealand. There's still a long way to go, you know, the development, the pathways and bringing people through. But, yeah, I'll tell you what, it's sort of, you know, there's a glass ceiling to continue to be broken in women's cricket in New Zealand and women's sport.
We're on the same master agreement now, the same match fees for men and women, the full PD program for domestic women, which is something we're really proud of. And it's significant that you can wrap around the same support and the same service, regardless of whether you're playing domestic men's or domestic women's.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, like the athlete's wellness is so important these days. We even see it in men's cricket as well. You know, there's so many circuit or leagues that the players are playing in international cricket in terms of touring life is a lot bigger. There's been the situation with bubble life, and to be able to have that well-being support and New Zealand cricket as well, understanding that players do need a break. And we've seen that, especially in the White Ferns environment, that with the advent of professional sport also comes the social media scrutiny and how you deal with those aspects of it. So I think that's been crucial, and I think the program and the support that the Players Association and New Zealand Cricket has put in that wellness space has definitely, I guess, paid off in spades. And even at that domestic layer, that players are able to reach out to those services, knowing that they're on tally now, there's more pressure outside of that, that they're able to reach out, get those services and have that support they need, I think is life-changing. And not only that, I mean, you look at retired players as well, and you sort of like, you get lost a bit. Who are you as a person? You're so used to having the highs and lows of playing cricket. But when you leave, it's sort of like there's that massive hole that can be there for players. And it's how do you sort of cover that? And you know, there's a few issues there that can arise, and the support as well post-retirement, I think, is just as important as during playing careers as well.
Katie, as part of my research, I had the pleasure of watching your videos for Spark Sport. I think it's Katie on tour. I've heard you on stump mics as well. You're one of the characters of the White Ferns and the Sparks. You know, the car karaoke, golf with Sophie Devine, you know, quiz night with Jacob Borum, and I can't believe he got a photo of his bottom, but we'll talk about that another time. How does all this come about?
Yeah, I mean, I think it probably looks effortless, but there's a lot that goes in behind the scenes, and just in terms of what got asked as an opportunity from Alex Lewis, who's the EP at Spark, and he said, oh, we're really keen to sort of see inside the White Ferns environment. And yeah, you sort of look at environments externally and go, I wonder what it's like to be on tour life. And it was like, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it 100%, and I'm going to give you warts and all. And that's what came out. That was, you know, that was pretty, there was emotional times in the videos, and like the good times and the bad times. And that was a true reflection of what tour life was like. And that's what they're after. I don't know if New Zealand cricket thought it would be to that extent, but that is honestly reality of cricket and what the emotions that you go through. So yeah, I just sort of come up with a few themes that we talked about, and obviously my best mate Susie Bates had to be in one of the first episodes, so it was after her giving me a black eye because she was just getting back to throwing. So yeah, we just come up with a few stories, and the girls went on tour around one of the Shakespeare towns, I can't remember the name of it, so they were wandering around, so they actually really got into it as well. So I just think it gave an insight into what touring life was like, and how much fun we do have, and what we are, I guess, what the White Ferns are as people, as opposed to just the athletes that you see on TV and the persona that you necessarily make. So I think it's important that all athletes are able to be themselves, and people will critique that. And you know what New Zealand's like, you know, people get pulled down, but ultimately everyone just wants to see who people are as human beings and genuine human beings. And yeah, we got the opportunity to do that on various humorous people that are in the team, some more than others. Won't say who that is though, but
I did like the warts and all. You showed that you got a vulnerable side, and can I commend you for sharing that with us? You're very open, very emotional. I think it was about leaving mum. I think you got to day 30 or something, which I didn't realise the tours are that long, and you were having a tough day, and you shared that, because a lot of people, and as you see on social media, we only see everyone's good times. We don't see that someone had a crappy day, or you know, it didn't go so good against England, and you're really hurting.
Yeah, I just sort of felt if I was going to do it, I've just got to be myself, and that was who I was at that time. I got concussion, which I was really struggling with, and sometimes that rides the emotions a wee bit, disappointed in my own performances, and yeah, they said, you know, just turn the camera on whatever you're feeling, and I did that. I'm quite a private person, so it's sort of, I guess seeing that side of me was probably, I didn't watch the videos back necessarily because I don't really like watching myself, but I just felt like if you wanted to see what it was like, and that's what it was like, and that's a true reality. So it is tough talking into a camera when you're crying or when you're upset, because it sort of seems quite unnatural. You know, people turn on a camera and then you've got this persona that gets put on. But that was just what I was feeling like at the moment. And, you know, and good on Spark for putting it on there as well. It's easy, I guess, to say, oh, we're not going to show that because that's maybe not what people like. But like, I do get upset. Mum always comes up and packs my bag because she's like that, even though I was, you know, 37 years old. Because that's what's important to her. And that's, you know, when you do get emotional, especially like you're going on the other side of the world, you're in a COVID bubble, and there's all those aspects of that. How do we get home? What if something happens and you can't get home? And so it was just turning the camera on when I had emotions and things to talk about, whether it was good or bad stuff. So yeah, it was definitely out of my comfort zone. But I think, yeah, I just had to do it justice on what I was doing, and that was what I was like on tour. So everyone got to see it.
We've talked about it in the office, but I didn't really get to grips with it till I heard you talking about it. Those long tours, the mental toll that it takes.
Yeah, it's kind of a hard thing to explain. It's like we had a World Cup here and everyone was living their normal life and we were in a bubble and we couldn't even hug our family. And so you have to have the support of the network around you. And with cricket, it's such a tough sport that sometimes you actually want to get away from that environment. But when you can't, you're actually stuck in it. And I think as a team, it grew us a lot closer together. But when you literally just go walk from your hotel to the ground, to your hotel to the ground, and then like on that tour, we got a thread against the team as well. And that was kind of like, holy, you know, there was a lot around that as well, which people don't expect. I mean, when you get messages of what potentially could happen to you and you turn up to a ground thinking, goodness, what's going to happen? you do get tighter as a team because everyone in that team cares and respects each other, and it just brought us together, and we made sure we were social together. We made sure we had a few lemonades, you know, in the team room as we needed, and, you know, and the little things around bringing the coffee machine on tour was able to have people feel like we were all level on the team. There was no hierarchy or anything like that in the team. It was, you know, everyone got on really well. So it did bring the team together, but I think long-term there may be more issues that may arise from that around the fact that you've had to, I guess, consolidate or put away some of the emotions that maybe you had because you've had to sort of go, we've got to suck it up, we've got to deal with it, and this is life. But sometimes you actually need to let it out, and you just need those people around you. So I'm glad that we're not in that environment anymore, and I hope we don't again, because it's definitely unsustainable.
I did write that down. Is it true you do take a coffee machine everywhere you go?
Yeah, I've got it's called Marty's Cafe. So
I love it.
It's a massive box. It's like, honestly, it's a massive box, about 20 kilos. I always get an extra baggage allowance. So I just order, I find at each of the places wherever we set it up, taught the girls all how to make coffee, and then they literally just run in the mill. So we have we only have a certain type of beans because it's the only way I know how to get the machine working properly. So Hannah Rowe, I think she was one of the machines. Like, she just every morning she'd be making coffee for people, and we'd set up a time, open the cafe. A lot of the coaches, they were sort of like Bob Carter, he was a bit needy. So I'd always get a, are you there? Can you make me a coffee? Is the cafe open? Which was most days. So we'd just set up a time and make people coffee. And English coffee is also terrible. So it was better to do that. But it was just one of those things of, how do you bring a team together? Let's take a coffee machine on tour. And it was like a full barista one, like separate grinder, everything like that. So it was great.
I saw it in one of the videos. Yeah. I was like, she's not taking that.
That has actually been to Bangladesh, that coffee machine. It's got literally gone all around the world. And I have to get a box before I go and then double box it up and then get certain stuff around it so it doesn't break. And it's usually I hold the breath and make sure it's still working. And when it's good to go, we're away. So, it's been one of the best purchases I've had, actually.
I scanned your LinkedIn. You are a transition manager for an IT company called CCL. Are you still doing that, or have that sort of you park that while you're doing the commentary stuff? And if yes, you are doing it, or just in general, what does a transition manager do?
Well, that's a great question. I still haven't worked that out.
Are you like Chandler?
Yeah. No, I finished up at CCL, I think, after cricket. So I sort of, once I finished up playing, I just sat down and figured out what I wanted to do. And I was very fortunate. I worked there for 10 years, headed up a department there. And then it just got to the point where having a professional contract meant I couldn't necessarily work. So I just worked there part-time just to keep myself occupied. And then, so now I'm doing some consultancy stuff at an insurance company. So that's pretty hectic, but they've been good to allow me to sort of do the commentary, and I'm able to work anywhere. So a transition manager, what's that? Like business transformation. So sort of moving, you know, the development of the people aspect and the technology, and making sure, you know, when we put a new technology, people know how to work. So it's sort of that kind of aspect. That's as best as I can explain it. You can ask my mum and she'll give you even worse answers. So
how did you find time for that with cricket and everything? And it sounds like a very specialised role.
It's a good question. I think I sort of learned as time went on how to be more prepared. Like, my time management was the most important thing. So setting up a plan on a Sunday around what the week looked like, what my training schedule was, putting in, you know, my calendar pretty clear. So I was able, because I was able to work part-time, I sort of could just do those hours during the week as I needed to do. And because I'd probably built up a few credits in the bank at work, they knew that I could do what I needed to do. So I've been fortunate to be able to have that support. I think I would have struggled financially if that wasn't the case, just because of where we were in terms of those match payments and from New Zealand Cricket, the previous MOU. So yeah, I enjoyed it though. I like, my brain likes to do a whole range of different stuff. So it meant that I could get away from the game and I guess be engaged with people outside of necessarily the cricket scene as well. So yeah, it made me keep that sort of, I would say, part intelligence side going.
Now, I'm stereotyping a bit here, but a lot of people in IT aren't known for their chatty banter, jokes, traditionally introverted, yet you're there. So are you like the chattiest person in the room?
I was, to be fair. Fortunately, our role wasn't necessarily too much around the technology. It was more around the people side. But one thing I did do is I always gave people nicknames. So I feel like if someone has a nickname, they really feel a part of the group, a part of the team. And in the office we were working in, we had sort of, it was like a separate office, but it had meeting rooms. And so there would be maybe about 40 of us. So people would walk in and we'd all just start clapping. And I said, oh, we've got to clap everyone that walks in this one given day. It was a Friday. And honestly, everyone walked in and they were like, what's going on? And they were smiling away. And it was just like, we were like, right, let's have everyone have a good day. So I was probably more disruptive, to be honest. That's what they would have said. But yeah, it was sort of, I loved it. I loved, you know, being in the office around people and, like I said, just a different type environment and that as well. But I definitely sort of brought that team lead skills in there, a lot of chat. I delegated a lot because I was sort of just so busy with it, but just wanted to make sure that people felt like they were all in a team together doing what we needed to do. And if I could have some good banter and, you know, and get the mickey taken out of me and vice versa and get people smiling in a day, then I guess I sort of did my job and earned my sort of part-time wage as I needed to.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about cricket. How did you get into the sport?
I played backyard cricket with the Ethorn boys in Dunedin. So we lived just right around the corner from each other. So just a traditional sort of Kiwi way of doing it. Sean Ethorn actually ended up playing for Otago for a few years. We've broken many windows. Apparently at the front yard where we play in the grass still hasn't grown back and they've tried to redo it a number of times. So that's quite entertaining. So yeah, we played at Albion Cricket Club as well. So it was one of my favourite cricket clubs in Dunedin. The McCullum boys played there. I remember a story, I'd won player of the match and I was too shy to go up and get my chips and my McDonald's voucher. So Nathan went up and got it for me. So yeah, now I do commentary with Brendan. So I sort of reminded him of that story when Nathan had my back and he didn't. So yeah, it was a good time growing up and I loved it. And, you know, good mates with the guys, played a lot of boys cricket. That's just what it was in the day. So, you know, I did love it. I was a little tomboy.
Why wicket keeping?
I don't know. I think the boys probably didn't have a wicket keeper and I sort of liked to be in the game. So I think I got to about 15 and really wanted to give up the gloves. And I got Billy Abadilla was a coach at the time and he took me up to his house in Maori Hill and he said, you can't give up wicket keeping. It's a really good selection opportunity. So if your batting's good enough, to have the gloves as an option as well would also be beneficial. And I think that's probably the best advice I've ever been given. I think half my international career I was a wicket keeper or a batter. So yeah, it sort of allowed me to be in that team. So I think remembering his wife walked in with the tea trolley. It was the most classic, you know. Yeah, Billy was a funny guy. So he got the tea rattled in and I was sitting there as a teacher was talking to me. And yeah, no, it was the best advice I've been given. And I sort of then decided, well, I had to stick with the glove. So I kept doing it. And I just think it's one of those things, you're always in the game and you're able to analyse what's happening out in the field, what the batters are doing, support the captain that as well. And I guess no one else would talk to me. So, I had to talk to the batter and keep chirping in the area. It's a lonely life somehow.
I'm guessing you try to get in their head. Like, there's a bit of psychological warfare in there, isn't there?
There is. If I was grumpy, I would say some sharp stuff. But as I matured with age, which was only till about when I was 35, I probably didn't say as many sharp things. But yeah, I think it's more about that intelligence, I reckon. Like if you're seeing what a batter's doing, you say some, you know, like, oh, there's a big gap between bat and pad. That's a real basic example. But it gets in the batter's mind. So if you can kind of distract them what they're doing rather than, oh, what'd you have for lunch? Like, you're not going to distract them that way, but making them think about something different. I always like to have a laugh with the girls as well out in the field. So I'd just be talking to, you know, if say someone was at mid-wicket, I'd be yarning to them just to annoy the batter. But yeah, as time went on, I think Millie started to ignore me on the field because she was just sick of me having light story time with her out in the field. And then the stump mic obviously got put up. So there was only certain things you were sort of allowed to say that could be heard on the stump mic. So I got a little bit more careful as time went on.
I have been fortunate enough to sit in the truck in the audio booth and they don't put it to air all the time, but you're on the stump mic quite a bit, as you're probably aware of.
Well, actually, because I talk so much, it's more actually a distraction of my mind because my brain's always going. Sometimes if I'm talking, then it means that I'm actually not worrying about sort of what I'm trying to do as a keeper, which sounds a bit weird. But if I'm actually being able to do something outside of just standing there and thinking about it, then I felt I was better and it gave me a lot more energy as well. I don't know if anyone else liked that, but it was beneficial to me. So I'll take that.
Hey, we're chatting via Zoom, so if I get you to put your hands up.
That one's not too bad. That's pointing at 1 o'clock.
I was going to ask you about hyperextended fingers and hand injuries because people don't realise how hard a cricket ball is. It's basically a piece of concrete coming in at 100K.
Yeah. Well, I've had a, this one, you won't be able to see it. This one here got dislocated. I got that in a game with my hand stuck in the ground and it popped out and I was like, and we had the semi-final 2 days later. So I said, put it in, and then I've taped it up. So I couldn't really feel it in that semi-final, but yeah, you sort of just deal with it, and you get one on the end of the finger in the first game of the season and it's there the whole time. So yeah, you sort of take a few pills and get through it. But I think it's just sort of part of being a wicketkeeper that you'll get a few knocks in that. But yeah, if anyone wants to know when it's 1 o'clock, I can easily just put my finger up and show them. So
if I had to describe that to the audience, if you can picture a finger that's unnaturally going in the wrong direction.
it's a little bit odd, but I've got short, stumpy fingers anyway, so I guess I was probably made to be a wicketkeeper.
I read somewhere that your family are heavily involved in your career, or were heavily involved in your career. I know mum's your packing expert, but if I read this right, did mum and dad come to almost every game or every game that you played in?
Yeah, pretty much. Like since I was young, they're always mum and dad have both been managers of the Otago team. Dad always used to drive us from Dunedin to Christchurch and have the TAB on Boxing Day when we had our week long at Lincoln. So the girls learn a little bit about dad's enthusiasm for horse racing. But yeah, they've had a great time. And I think I sort of reflect on my career. It's not only myself, but mum and dad have been able to travel the world. Dad come to India on my very first tour. So he jumped on a plane. That was when dial-up internet was on. And he turned, he missed the test match because I wasn't meant to be playing in it. And he turned up and he had his New Zealand flag, and every game he'd bring the flag along. I'd always give him a floppy every series that I have. And at the World Cup, they decided to get a camper van and camper van from Wellington up to Auckland on our back end of our World Cup. They missed the first game, and I think that's the biggest regret of missing that game against the West Indies. So yeah, they've had a really good life for me as well. This is their first Christmas without cricket, so dad's now taken up a job at Otago Cricket, so I think they wanted to keep in the game somehow, and it's great for him to give back in that respect. But I think it also means that he can spend some more summers watching cricket as well. Mum said she did have a bit of a tear when she went past the Queenstown Event Centre, knowing that I wouldn't be playing there. So you sort of hear that and you feel, you know, a little bit pain that you're not playing. But as I said to her, you've had something like 25 years, Mum, so I think it's about time you get your own life and we can go on holiday in Queenstown not having to play cricket. So I've done a deal with her.
You played your entire 21 years at Otago. I know where this answer is going to go, but were you ever tempted by the grass on the other side, or did any coach ever try and snaffle you and go, hey, come up this way, or come in this direction, we'll make it worth your while?
Many years, yeah. I just didn't. Well, the first thing is Dad said that he would disown me if I ever played for Canterbury. And at that time, I was still at university, so I needed some extra allowance from Mum and Dad. And then I always felt like I'm a loyal person. It's sort of a Dunedin thing. Loyalty is very important to us. And so I just felt like I wanted to continue to give back to Otago. And it was probably as challenging for them as it was for me, not being necessarily in the city for so long. I made the decision after being selected in the New Zealand Cricket Academy to stay up in Christchurch. And I've been able to sort of, I guess, I say make this my home, but it's a place I live, but Dunedin will always be my home. And I've been so grateful to be able to continue to give back. And I felt Canterbury were too strong then anyway. And I'm just a passionate Dunedin person and wanted our team to be successful. And we've definitely been successful. We've won three or four titles as well in my time. And yeah, I think now this year it's awesome to see Polly Ingalls get an opportunity, and our fingers crossed she can make the most of that. And she reaches out a few times for bits and pieces of advice. So it was definitely time to give up and all of it at the one point, so that other people can have the opportunity to do, I guess, to, you know, not fill in my shoes, make their shoes their own and be themselves and do what they need to do. So yeah, I love Dunedin. I don't know if the weather necessarily, but geez, on a good day, sounds like a Wellingtonian. It is a great day. So
you officially retired. What's the feeling like watching as a retired player?
Yeah, I've had that question a lot, actually. Well, I did make my way over to England in the middle of the year and then ended up being at the bronze medal game. And I was just, I honestly had an absolute blast. And I thought that was my first game of watching the team after I retired, and I thought I'd have those emotions. But I'm legitimately just a fan of cricket. Like, I absolutely love the game. And even though I've played for so long, I love watching the game as well. A little impatient at times watching, because that's sort of how my brain operates. But so when I was there, I was just so into the game, and I just wanted the girls to do so well. So yeah, I think being there today and watching them and commentating on them, it's just another opportunity to sort of give back in a different way, to be honest. And I'm just excited. I just get excited to see these youngsters that are coming to team, like an Eden Carson, and you know, Jess McFadden's got her debut today, which is so awesome for her. And I'm just excited to be able to see the next generation of players coming through and watch my mates that, you know, that I've been able to play with so long to be successful. And I think, and also I'm excited about Bangladesh, like being able to actually come to New Zealand and play in a bilateral series, which they never get the opportunity to do. I'm just like, how exciting is this for women's cricket? So I'll just be like a kid at Christmas, to be honest.
One of my favourite quotes about you was from Sophie Devine when the Ferns won the bronze at the Commonwealth Games. Now, I don't know if you heard it, but to have Katie Martin screaming from the crowd, still yelling louder than 20-odd thousand people, you can still hear her bloody voice. It doesn't matter where she is in the world. So you've got a bit of cut through with that voice, haven't you?
Yeah, there was a bit of cut through. To be honest, I met up with Merle Kerr's partner, and me and him drove up to, when I got into London, I got in the night before and met him first thing in the morning, and we drove up and we got to the ground and he said, all right, we'll go and quickly say hi to the girls before we go. So we were trying to find them. And I remember we walked up these stairs and we'd just ducked under an area we weren't allowed to go into, and saw Sophie sitting there, and they looked really flat. And I was just like, oh no. So I was like, just girls, come on, we've got a bronze medal. Like, how awesome is this? Like, we can win a bronze medal. And then they all started trailing out, like, who the hell is this? And so I've high-fived them, all of them, on their way out. Like, because I guess sometimes you want to be able to try and give them a little bit of lift if you can, whether it's, you know, as a fan in the crowd or being some weird, annoying friend of cricket on the sideline, giving them high fives. In 10 years' time, I won't be allowed to do this, so I'll make the most of it now. And so just standing there and watching the anthem and just smiling away and singing it, like, it was such an awesome moment. And we sat in the crowd and the first ball happened. Oh, no. And then Nathan goes, Katie, we're not going to be doing this all game, are we? And I was like, oh, I'll try not. So as I kept trying to jump up, he'd put his hand out. So I'll go to the bar. It's 10 o'clock in the morning and we've had a couple of drinks already. And I think he just thought, oh, I wish I hadn't gone along with you. And we're sitting with Sophie Devine's parents, and Pete Devine he's one of those guys you can hear, like, honestly, from, if we were playing in Dunedin, you'd hear him from Christchurch, but he was so nervous. So I'm here having to bring the heat. Like, Pete, like, trying to encourage him, and he left me high and dry. And I remember the English fans, they had their little, like, 6 and 4, and they were flapping it around, and everyone's like, go England, and then 20,000 people in there, go New Zealand, and I'm like, Kiwi, like, by my lone self. And then about an hour later, when clearly we were thrashing England, which is great on any given day, I start chanting Kiwi, and then the crowd starts clapping a little bit. So I keep getting into it. So near the end of the game, the actual English supporters were starting to cheer on the Kiwi girls. And I'm just like waving to the girls from up in the sideline. And oh, it was just like pure adrenaline and just love, like, for all my mates out there thinking, a bronze medal at a Commonwealth Games, these players will never potentially get, some of them will never get that again. To see, you know, Sophie there at the end and Batesy if they don't end up playing another Comm Games. I was just like, what a special moment. So I thought, well, if I'm only allowed Kiwi support here, I better give them my all, much to Nathan's disgust. So I don't know if we'll ever watch a cricket game together again, but
199 international games, 21 years of domestic matches, hundreds of stumpings across all the formats. I know this is a tough one, but is there a moment that sticks out for you? Is there something that you sat, you know, walked back to the changing rooms and went, this was a good day?
We've had a lot of tough moments, to be honest, and at the White Ferns level. Just 2009, we made the T20 and One Day World Cups and lost both of those. I don't know, moments probably for me more stand out were like when my mates have scored runs. Like, I remember, like, Susie and I used to have remunerate her at the end of a series. I was like, every 100 you get, I'll give you $50. And it was like, just to try and encourage her, not that she needed it. And so there was a time there for a few years, I thought, oh, I love you scoring runs, but I'd like, you know, I don't earn that much money, mate. So I think she gave me $50 once. I might've got 50. So yeah, like, I probably get more joy out of other people's success. So seeing that and, you know, like Samili scoring that 200 is probably more for me than anything else. What, there was one game where we played Australia at the World Cup 2018 and we had them like 4 for 4. And it was just like, was unbelievable. And we absolutely thrashed them. And they complained about the wicket the day before. And it was like out, it was like backs against the wall kind of stuff. So that was one of those performances where we absolutely thrashed Australia. And you just felt that sense of this is our year. And we ended up losing in the semi-final to the West Indies. But we were, that was probably our tournament to win that one there. So that was one that probably stood out most. I think from an Otago Sparks perspective, the way we won the final against Auckland, where Polly Ingalls and Caitlin Blakey, I think they needed 30 odd runs to win for us. And I remember Warren Lees was coach, and he hit up in the change. We thought he'd gone home actually. He'd hit up in the changing rooms, and just that moment to see like Otago win their first one day title for such a number of years, and some awesome legends in that team as well. At the time, I just, that was probably the most memorable moment of my Otago Sparks career as well. So yeah, it's a funny one. I wouldn't have had the success I would have liked at New Zealand level, but I think if I look back on my career, like, did I leave a legacy of me as a human in terms of that team? And that's probably the thing I'm more proud about. And those moments are more about the team and individuals outside of myself. I think I've had more joy out of.
Is there a point in time when you thought, okay, I'm done. I'm going to have to, you know, hang up the gloves, so to speak?
Probably year 2016, 17, 18. No, there was a few. No,
wow.
There was a time, I think, maybe 2016, where I sort of felt that was it for me. And I sort of took a year off in terms of playing, made myself unavailable for New Zealand. I just sort of wanted to focus on my career and sort of start building something outside of cricket, especially because we weren't professional at that point in time. And then I remember Hayley Tiffin, when she was coach, a year later said, do you want to come back and play? And I said, oh, yep, I'm really keen to do that. So, and I think that probably gave me another, 5 or 6 years of my career. And I think when I come back, it was nothing about results. I probably just was a fearful player. I don't want to get out. And that kind of attitude in my start of my career, that when I come back, I was like, you know what? Doesn't matter. Like, it does matter, but I just want to enjoy the game and just be relaxed in it. And I think that sort of just showed in my enjoyment at the back end of my career was just, I love turning up to training. I love being around the group and that. But I knew that the World Cup, that was going to be my last. I didn't think, yeah, Commonwealth Games would be great, but it wasn't definitely on the radar. And with that year delay because of COVID, I knew that the time was right. And now sitting in the position I am now, I'm like, yeah, I made the right decision. I don't have any interest in going out playing, and I'm happy sitting on the sideline and just supporting the game from afar.
Katie, outside of cricket, what are you into? Someone said you've built a couple of houses or been involved with some houses and fully managed that whole process.
I'm not renovating because Dad won't let me use the drill. So every time if I need a picture put up, he has to come up from Dunedin to put it up. So I've been banned from the drill. Yeah, I sort of love housing. Like, some an interest to me. I've built the house that I'm in now, and I've got another one that I'm building around the corner. So yeah, I do love property, and I love sort of the interior design, and it's something Mum loves as well. So we sort of get into it, and I've got about 100 house and garden magazines sitting at home around what the new style is. So yeah, it's definitely something I'm interested in. I'm sort of quite time poor. I love reading books, but I only like one. I've only got one author that I like, so I really need to branch out. So if anyone knows some good crime novels, that'd be a good way to go. So yeah, that's sort of my interest. I like, you don't have much time, so I kind of like just being able to chill at home and hanging out with mates when I can, and then researching property. So I might need a bit, maybe I'll talk to Players Association about helping me out with that sort of stuff. But in fairness, I did spend a bit of time with a provider from the Players Association around finances and budgeting and how to go about that. So that's been something that's been really helpful. So I was actually texting them yesterday, so we better get on to actually getting a mortgage approved with these new interest rates. Might be in a little bit of trouble.
Now, this one, I'm going to be honest, I have spoken to some of your colleagues, friends, players, a name that you've mentioned a few times. So when I chuck this out and go, any stories from your playing days? And I have some I can chuck out at you if you want to elaborate on them.
I mean, you can throw them out. I mean, there's lots of different stories. Depends what you throw them out.
Here's a couple I've been told. There's a lap of honour at the MCG. How did that go for you? There's walking down the road in England with Susie Bates and you walked into someone.
Yes.
So that one, I was laughing quite a bit there. And also coming in hot to wicket celebrations and maybe slipping over or something along those lines.
Yeah, those are the three classic ones.
This is your time. So is any one of those you think that would be more worthy of sharing with our audience than another?
Well, the second one is definitely not appropriate, but it was, I mean, it was the most funniest, most embarrassing moment of my life. But at the MCG, I got a 5-minute talking ban because I just talk too much. And anyway, the 5-minute, we're walking around to get to the next part for our after the game celebrations, and my 5-minute ban had been stopped. So I was just absolutely rabbiting away, and I was talking away and wasn't looking where I was going. And then bang, straight into a door. So my whole face banged into this door because I was too busy talking. So that was the first part of the MCG. So the girls were in hysterics then. I actually had 5 minutes of not talking because I couldn't feel my face. And then Frankie Mackay and I were running a little bit late. We just got distracted. I think we met one of the guys off Kath and Kim, and we got distracted yarning away to him. And we had, you have your all access passes. This has been the best idea, I reckon, of my entire life. So we were walking back, and it might have been India-Australia doubleheader that we'd played beforehand. And so we got up to the end of the stand, and we could see the girls on the opposite side. And this is a sold-out MCG. And I said to Frankie, mate, we're going to miss the bus. Like, we're going to have to find a quicker way of getting out there. And I said, look, I've got an idea. Let's go down to the ground, use our all-access pass, and we'll walk inside the boundary line and get across the other side. And Frankie's like, there's absolutely no chance. I was like, mate, just got to put our shoulders back. Let's act with a lot of confidence as if we're meant to be on the boundary. So Frankie, she doesn't listen to me on commentary nowadays because she should have. She listened to me at that time. I was successful. And I tell her, remember that story? And she goes, I still can't believe it. So we wandered down, and like, I'm like, you there, mate? She's like, yeah. And she's embarrassed behind me, like, why are we doing this? And I was like, oh, g'day, mate. We just got to go over there, and held up her pass. He's like, yep, no worries. Opens the gate. So this is a few, I've had a few lemonades at this point. I had, Frankie had him. And we were just walking inside the boundary line, and Frankie's just like, the crowd starts cheering, and we're thinking something's happened in the game. And they're cheering at us. And I was like, Frankie, let's wave. So we were waving like this to the Indian crowd, and they were chanting as we were walking past. And the girls were just like looking at us, just absolutely cracking up laughing. And we get there with 5 minutes to spare. And I was like high-fiving Frankie. I was like, that's the best thing we've ever done in our entire life. So we've been 5 minutes early, and we've been cheered from the Indian crowd as well. So yeah, it was a real highlight. It started bad, obviously walking into a door, but then it was a highlight at the end of the day.
Katie, what's coming up for you in the next little while?
Well, I get to hang out with my mates on the White Ferns tour, doing commentary for Spark Sports. So with them over the next couple of weeks, and hopefully have Christmas with the family up home. That'll be nice. I think my brother's family's coming over from England as well. So hopefully get a little bit of a break over that Christmas period and hang out with the family. And yeah, maybe I'll take Mum to the cricket if she's up for watching a little bit more cricket. I'm sure she will. She hasn't asked for tickets yet, but yeah, so that's sort of it. So just hopefully have a little bit of a break, and hang out with my mates on White Ferns tour.
Well, Katie Martin, thank you so much for coming on Through the Pickets. Best of luck with all the commentary gigs, knocking it out of the park, both on the telly here and in Aussie. And also, as you touched on, have a great Christmas, and I hope 2023 brings you everything you want and more.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Through the Pickets is an NZCPA production. If you'd like to learn more about what we do and our members, make sure you follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and our website, nzcpa.co.nz. If you liked our podcast, please do take a minute to subscribe and give us a 5-star review. I'm Dennis Katsanos, and you've been listening to Through the Pickets.